We're here at the Red Sound Studios out in Warrington, PA. Ben's back with us. He wasn't here on Monday, so we ran nonsense here without him. As always, I'm your host, Justin Emery. Got my co-host, Mike Irano, here.
Great to be back, and these NBA playoffs are getting quite heated. And I'll tell you right now, it's been an exciting brand of basketball to watch. With every series, with all the injuries you've seen, and the teams that really are having to win with will more than skill.
I mean, the Rockets definitely willed their way back into Game 6, which is tonight at 10:30. I'm going to be out of here going to check that out. Probably fall asleep at halftime, though, because I can't stay awake for the Pacific games.
Got to wait to the third quarter and see how much the Clippers are up by.
Oh, yeah, it's gonna.
Yeah,
be
that's good. Really my big point about that. The Rockets are going to have to keep up that pace that they have. They really played
an inspired
game of basketball.
I'll tell you exactly what saved them in Game 5. Jordan's foul trouble in the first half.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt.
He had three fouls within 10 minutes left.
And you see that
quarter.
Was also on top of that. Now you see Dwight Howard with 20 points. And then the whole Rockets team was able to drive the basket. And that's when the Rockets were at their best, when Harden's driving the basket, when he's kicking and shooting to these other shooters around and getting them open. And that's what you saw without it. And it's so funny, the game before that, Dwight Howard's in foul trouble and the Clippers blow them out. So it works both ways.
For sure. We have Daniel LaRue of Sporting News. He's out in San Francisco Bay Area. He covers the Warriors out there. But he actually wrote an interesting article today on the Sixers free agency coming up. So we're going to have him on in probably about 13 minutes or so to talk NBA as a whole.
Yeah, we'll get some quite new Sixers knowledge,
Maybe. And on top of that, the Sixers have a new logo, did you see it? It's a basketball-wielding Ben Franklin.
I don't know how I feel about it. I mean, I don't hate it. And that's really not the first reaction. Usually, you mildly like something and then grow to detest it. That's the usual, logo, climax chart. Okay, I don't hate it. It's usually I mildly like it, and then you hate it. So now I'm starting with just above hate.
Yeah, Stephen A. Smith hates it.
He
said something along the lines of, it's an embarrassment. You should worry about the roster and the players on the court, not the mascot. But when you think about
the logo.
The logo.
Is Ben Franklin the mascot now? Is that what they're going for?
Yeah.
The moose?
I'm pretty sure that he's the mascot now. Isn't he? They have a new mascot. I thought it was the Ben Franklin.
Well, the owner holds more Ben Franklins than anybody on the East Coast, I think, so.
Oh, yeah. Yo, I saw something. Yo, he brought the franchise to $280 million, and it's now estimated to be worth excess of $880
million. Those owners wanted to get out.
They want to get out. They'll be out within the next two, three
years.
I'll
just say this. I don't want to get too much on what teams are worth. Think about when the Clippers sold, their estimated worth before the sale was $750 million, and they sold for $2 billion. So on the open market, you never know. He jumped into a great deal, and he got a good fan base. But I'm going to save some Sixers for later because I want to go.
Hold on. He's a fake dog that's blue, and his name's Franklin.
That's the
mascot.
Let me see.
This picture right there. They unveiled him, I think, right after the All-Star break last year.
Okay. I'm just going to move on from that. You guys, I don't know how to explain that. That kind of threw me off. If I don't move on, this show might get derailed after that picture.
Oh, man.
But,
man.
This Golden State Warriors Grizzlies series was really something to watch. And I know the Warriors took the last two games pretty handily by 16 and 20.
Definitely. And let me tell you why a big part of that was, is that Tony Allen did not play. And I thought about betting the game at the last second when I saw it, because they didn't announce that he wasn't going to play until literally 15 minutes before the game
started.
Really
quick.
But every time you take a first-team all-defensive player out of the lineup against one of the best offensive teams in the game, you can't really expect to win it. And I'm pretty sure that game was in Golden State, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was in Golden State.
They were facing an uphill battle with
him. Oh, yeah, that was
really
tough to do, really. And now you have a game where Toliano missed. Randolph's been banged up all series. And Conley missed game one, too. So it's really been tough for the Grizzlies. They haven't been 100%. They haven't been able to play defense 100%. And with the reemergence, really, what this series came down to was is guys like Andre Iguodala hitting shots, Harrison Barnes hitting shots early, Green regaining some momentum as a scorer. You know, he didn't really shoot the three in that game, but he was able to attack the basket and be another option. And when you see that, even though Thompson starts off 1-for-5, you still find a way to come back from a 12-point deficit in the first quarter to being up 2 at the end of the first quarter with a big three from Steph Curry, which is just all he did was make 6 threes.
Oh, yeah, he looked great. Really, if they – I mean, obviously I can say if they don't win this game, they're done. But even if they win this game, they're done. Like,
yeah,
they won't win game 7.
They're not going to win game 7 in Golden State. I really think that was the last chance they would have to win that game. And with the injuries they have, it's just too much. You know, they got home court for a reason. They're the number one team for a reason. They're the best team, home team in the NBA this year. So – and looking forward, like we just talked about the Rockets, I think they're dead men walking at this point. So really the West is going to come down to the Clippers and Golden State, and that's going to be one hell of a series. And to me, I know there's still 4 teams available left in the East, but to me, whoever wins the Golden State-Clippers series is going to be the NBA champion.
Oh, yeah, the only team that stands a chance in the East is the Cavaliers.
And really, what it comes down to with the Cavaliers is Kyrie has really just been injured. I mean, he's got that knee. Now you hear he's got a foot thing on the other side, and he's really not been 100%. And I know LeBron might be able to will his way past the Bulls because another big guy by the name of Pau Gasol has
who are actually playing
games.
Right now.
They've
yeah.
just tipped off, actually, with this show.
I'll see if I get some score updates periodically.
But yeah, I think, and even though I do think the Bulls, with their backs against the wall at home, will win this game tonight versus the Cavs, and I think that's going to do the Cavs in. I don't think the Cavs make it out of the East. I want to make that statement right now. If Atlanta stays healthy and they finish off the series against Washington, which I think they will, I think they're going to beat the Cavs. I do. I don't think without Kevin Love, with Kyrie banged up, and if they have to go 7 games with the Bulls, and he doesn't get time to rest, I really don't know if the Cavs have what it takes to be deep enough. That's the thing about the Hawks. They're going to be running. They run 8 guys deep, all scorers, all, you know, go, 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 all game long. So that first 6-7 games against the Cavs, who are banged up, could really prove to be a tough formula for them, especially when you got your number 2 scorer in Kyrie banged up and Kevin Love.
Oh, they're
Love
all
gone.
Banged up. Yeah, Kevin Love.
And even LeBron has a groin thing. He twisted his ankle. I mean, injuries are the name of the game in the NBA. If you go back, the healthy team is the team that wins.
Definitely. I mean, I don't know. There was kind of a little rift between Kevin Love and the rest of the team. Now, I'm not saying you're better without Kevin Love on the court, but from a chemistry standpoint, you might be better without Kevin Love on the court. And is there any guarantee that he comes back next year?
I would say there's no guarantee, especially with Kevin Love being an injury-prone guy his whole career. I wouldn't be surprised if they go in a different direction. But
I don't want to start the rumor mill up, but I've heard Kevin Love and Westbrook collab in L.A. with the Lakers.
Now, is Westbrook a free agent after this year?
Restricted,
year?
I believe.
Restricted free agent, okay.
But
Kevin Durant's unrestricted.
Yes.
Okay, so this could be a big offseason, really.
Yeah, and they just brought in the new coach. They brought in Billy Donovan, the guy that – who you were talking about on the way in, just won 2 national championships down in Florida a couple of years ago. But, I mean, Westbrook and Kevin Love are both from L.A. Kobe is actively trying to recruit Russell Westbrook. And if you get Kevin Love just by chance, pair him up with who was the first-round pick that got hurt? Julius Randle, who's now, granted, he missed his whole pretty much his whole rookie season with a broken leg. That'll be back. He'll be rehabbed. He'll be ready to go. I mean, the Western Conference is deep, but you can never count out Kobe Bryant.
No, and I could see that team working. There's a lot. This offseason is going to be a big offseason, but right now I'm too focused in on this playoff run, and I can't wait for this Clippers Golden State series. And I know we're still I might be jumping the fence a little early on this issue.
I think that's what it will turn out into. Especially after tonight, I don't see Houston standing a chance at all. I give
in LA now.
In LA, I don't say it.
I'll just say this, though. If the Clippers lose this game, going back into Houston in Game 7, anybody could win.
I agree, but
so,
I don't think
they're just
going to
leave.
Seven.
Yeah, they were up. Remember, this is a team up 3-1. Obviously, it's hard to close a team out at 3-1. It's just a tough environment, especially if you're in their building. But now with their backs against the wall, I see the Clippers with the knockout punch coming at home.
I agree. And, I mean, they had it handed to them in Game 5. But, like I said earlier in the show, it was all because DeAndre Jordan's foul trouble. Like, that's what it came down to. He came off the court with, like, 8.5 minutes left in the second quarter and didn't come back in until after halftime.
Yeah. And that's a big time.
And right after that, I don't remember the announcer for the game, but right after that, they noted Howard had sat on the bench for like 10 minutes of rest, came back in, and just started lighting it up.
Yeah. But another point that I would make about the Clippers is they came off a very, very motivating series versus the San Antonio Spurs, very high-intensity series. Then Chris Paul misses the first two games. So now the team's playing with a high level of intensity to try to make up for that. I think there was a little sleepiness, a little lack in their step. Going up 3-1, Chris Paul back in the driver's seat. You know what I mean? This is, mind you, a team that has lost. There's not been to a conference finals yet. They're still learning how to do this playoff basketball thing. And, you know, as much as how great Chris Paul is and Blake Griffin has been this year, they're still learning to be great in the playoffs. Not saying that they won't go and win it all this year. This might be their year, but they still have some maturing to do.
I'm just checking out our guests who are having up, Daniel LaRue. I'm checking out his Twitter page right now. He's live tweeting the Cavs Bulls game winning. So, Pau and Noah both started tonight.
That's a big deal that Pau Gasol's playing.
Yeah,
he's a real difference maker, especially with the lack of size that Cleveland presents playing a smaller lineup.
Yeah, and even with Kevin Love, that wouldn't matter. Kevin Love's
not a defensive player.
You know,
especially
he doesn't want to get down there and bang bodies. You know? That's why another point, I want to see Golden State and the Clippers, and that's what we will see.
Yeah.
But I'd rather see Gasol and Zebo versus Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan. That's what I'd rather see.
Hey, you could still see that. We're going to see a Game 7 with the Bulls. And if I'll tell you right now.
What does that have to do with anything? Who did you say? Marc Gasol and Zebo.
Oh, Mark, you messed me up with Gasol. I thought Pau Gasol.
No.
No, we're not going to see that. And it's sad. No, it really brings
I would love to see that, though. Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan against Zebo.
Well, I think they knocked them out before.
Oh, they did, but I'm saying, like...
Again, now...
This is, like, the real year.
Right, for the Clippers. Yeah, I agree. And I just want to take a minute here and throw some sympathy to the Memphis Grizzlies for the injuries that they've had this postseason. They've really... With the addition of Jeff Green from the Celtics, that really was the piece for me that I felt put them over the top to compete.
Don't they have Vince Carter, too?
And Vince Carter, too. But now you see the injuries to Tony Allen, the injury to Jeff Conley, and with Randolph banged up again. You know, but he's such a physical player, he's always banged up. But really has really stunted them from, you especially like an old school basketball team. And I really almost see the Sixers trying to build a similar mold to that. So that's really why I'm looking at the Grizzlies as a little bit of a, I've always had a little bit of a fixation for them. And I wanted to see them versus the Heat, you know, 2 years ago.
What, the Grizzlies?
They would have beat the Heat either time, whether the when the Mavericks went or the 2 years after that.
I don't know. I don't know if I can agree with you on that.
No. Marc Gasol and Zebo?
Relax.
They would have beasted.
All right.
Chris Bosh would have no clue what to do.
All right. For all of our listeners out there, the phone number is 347-857-4467. Call in and agree with me and tell my co-host Mike that he is out of his mind. So, that number again, 347-857-4467. Check us out online, Facebook, Twitter. Talking NBA right now.
I'm not saying that the Heat wouldn't get in the run, but the way they're built, I like the way the Grizzlies built their team with the old school mentality. And I just like to see going forward that if they come back with another strong year. I just think this is not their year. This is Steph Curry's year. He's the MVP. He's the guy I really want to see. Ever since he was from, I guess, Dayton, I think it was. He came out of Dayton. I mean, he was a guy that run he had in the NCAA tournament to bring his team, I think, to the Sweet 16 almost single-handedly. He was, to me, I knew then he was going to be a great player. And to see how far he's gone since then, you know, now winning an MVP, I never thought it'd be that good. And now, you know, in a year or two, you might be looking at Steph Curry as the best player in the NBA, not Chris Paul, not Kobe Bryant, not LeBron James or Carmelo Anthony. It's going to be probably Steph Curry and another new guy with Anthony Davis who's looked really good, but Steph Curry just knocked him out and swept Davis. So now, mind you, they have a lot better of a team in Golden State, but I really hope that they're the ones who are lifting the trophy at the end of the year. I'd like to see, the Cavs, but to me, just what Atlanta did with the way they put the pieces together, the way that coaching staff really molded together, I'd love to see Atlanta get to the finals and get some exposure for what they've done this year. I'm sick of LeBron James taking the East. Somebody else's turn.
I disagree. I like to see the best players win. That's just the way that I am. And we got our first guest on the line. He's going to be joining us right now. Bring him on. Danny LaRue coming on to talk NBA with us. He is a writer for the Sporting News, also for the Warriors World. Joining us out in California right now. Hey, Danny, thanks for joining us tonight. Take us some time out. How's it going?
Hey, going well. How are you guys?
Not too bad.
Doing pretty good.
You know, as Sixers fans, we can't really enjoy the playoffs having our own team in it, so we have to live it out through the Western Conference.
Yeah, it's easier to live it out through the Western Conference than the East right now.
Definitely, I agree with that. I think most of the teams in the West would have easily taken the one seed in the East, and I even feel bad for, you know, OKC missing it. They're probably better than they probably would have been a 3 or 4 seed, even with the injuries they suffered.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big supporter of something that moves towards a top 16 format for that exact reason. I think that the goal is to have the best teams in. I don't think it affects the title too much, but I just think it makes a more entertaining playoffs when you don't have good teams out.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And really, especially, I think what highlights that is the series that we saw, and I'll always be talking about this. I'll try to get it on tape. The Spurs-Clippers series in round one. I mean, I don't know if we'll see basketball that intense this whole playoff run, let alone for the next couple of years. I mean, that was just an amazing series. And for their teams, the Spurs run to end so quick is almost a slap in the face.
Yeah, I mean, it was disappointing. In my eyes, those were two of the three best teams in the West, and you could argue they were two of the best four in the entire league. And so, you know, you never want to see those teams go through that kind of thing in the first round. But, you know, at the same point, you were going to have to go through them eventually. So while I'm disappointed it happened in the first round, I am happy it happened because you can, based on what we've seen in the playoffs, you know, we got to see those teams at pretty much full strength. And considering, you know, like what happened to Cleveland, we're not going to get to see them face anybody else other than the Celtics at full strength.
Yeah, that's really true. That's a great point. There's been a lot of health concerns, especially the team who's Golden State's playing with the Grizzlies have been struggling. But with the new landscape that you see right now, who's your favorite coming out of the West?
I still think it's the Warriors. I think that they are right now they're a really good team on both ends when they play well. They were the best defensive team in the league this year. It's statistically, and I agree with that just from the eye test from being around them. And their offense is really good as well. Of course, that gets more attention. But the Clippers are a really good team as well. You know, it's not like it's – I would have the Warriors as overwhelming favorites, but I would say they're the favorites.
Yeah, and that's another series I can't wait to see. I'll tell you, I know it's a little early, but I think it's inevitable. Clippers, Golden State, and that's going to be quite a show.
Well, yeah, and there's a lot of history. Basically, no matter which way the West shakes out, there's a lot of history between these four teams. I mean, you have a lot of stuff with the Grizzlies and the Clippers with Zebo and Blake Griffin, and then the Warriors. And the Clippers got in a tiff on Christmas Day, if you guys remember that.
I do forget about that.
Yeah, now I'm a firm believer that Steph Curry should have won the MVP and did. And that Golden State is the favorite coming out of the West, just as you did. But is there any chance at all that Memphis can upset them? I mean, Game 5, kind of, with Tony Allen being out, you knew that Golden State was going to run away with that game, especially at home. But is there any chance that the Grizzlies can win Game 6 and then somehow pull out a Game 7 miracle?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Memphis is, when they play at their best, they're a very good team. Memphis beat the Warriors at Oracle. They're one of only three teams to do that, and they would have to do it again, but I certainly think that they can. The challenge for Memphis is now that the Warriors have figured out a better way to defend them is more, can they score enough points? And they can, but it's going to take close to their best game to do it. So I'm not going to write them off. They're a team that tries really hard. They're a team, when you're as strong defensively as they are, I never write those kind of teams out, but it's going to be tough.
Oh yeah, and with what you've seen with Cleveland so far, with Kevin Love out for the playoffs and Kyrie really banged up, and even LeBron himself, do you see? And I don't know about Chicago, but do you see the Hawks with a real chance to unseat them? Is there anyone in the East who can claim the throne from the Cavs?
Yeah, I haven't been super impressed with Cleveland without Love. Obviously, they've played well, but to me, this was a series that Chicago still can, but definitely could have won, especially that game four when Kyrie was so limited and the Cavs won anyway, which was good for them. But it's a challenge for Cleveland because they don't have a real replacement for Love. Obviously, Tristan Thompson's a great player, but he's a very different player, so you can defend them differently. So I would actually say that any of the other three would have a chance. If I were to say who has the best chance, to me, instinctively, it's the Hawks because they can stretch the floor from the power forward spot with Paul Millsap, and Al Horford the last couple of games has been great, and Horford's the type of guy that can give Cleveland problems on the interior and get a guy like Mozgov into foul trouble.
Definitely. I mean, my personal favorite out of the East is the Cavaliers, but behind them, I think I have to go with Washington Wizards, especially that John Wall came back. I mean, he's not the same player with all the fractures in his wrist and his hand, but between him and Paul Pierce, you know, the Wizards are really a problem. And if it wasn't for, you know, that lucky, really, last-second score to give them the 82-81 lead, the Wizards would have won Game 5 and had the 3-2 the lead. So
sure.
Do you see the Wizards being able to be a contender in the finals, or is that just wishful thinking on my part?
I think that the Wizards have a decent shot of making the NBA Finals, if we're talking about that, but I don't think they would have a chance of winning that. But if we're talking about them coming out of the East, certainly. I mean, what's always kind of exciting in a way is when a team is playing their best basketball right now, and the Wizards, I would say, are the only team in the Eastern Conference that is doing that. They're playing well, and they won a game without John Wall, which seemed impossible to me. And they've been doing it with more shooting, which is good for them. It's something I actually was covering the Wizards for about 3 months during the season earlier in the year because I was back east for something. And they're a team that when they're playing well, they defend well. John Wall has been a huge positive part of their team. It would be interesting to see how they choose to go against a team like Cleveland, because their big weakness is that true perimeter defender. I mean, Paul Pierce has had a wonderful career. That's just not what he is right now. But they're playing really well, so I'm not gonna write them off against anybody in the East.
Yeah, no, I meant just to make it to the finals. I still think that anyone that comes out of the West, it should be the favorite over anyone in the East. But we're going to switch gears a little bit to the Sixers. What is your opinion of the new logo? Now, I kind of like it. My co-host, Mike, he's not really a fan of it too much. And we all know what Stephen A. Smith thinks of it. What are your thoughts on the new logo?
I think it's fine. It's not amazing. It's nothing that, I think is going to, set the world on fire. But for me, if I like it, if it's a neutral or a small positive, that's good. I mean, I get frustrated when I'm not a big fan of, like, the new Clippers one that's been kind of floated around a little bit and things like that. So I think it's fine. I think it's I'm a fan broadly of kind of the circular type stuff, just because I think it can work center court, and I think that's always nice. I always like to think of, how it fits in there. But I wouldn't say that I have a necessarily strong opinion either way. I'm guessing you guys do, being closer to it.
Well, we actually read your article from earlier today with saying how much the Sixers have cap and how much leverage against the league. Who do you think the Sixers could target to potentially make this team a competitor in the years coming?
Well, the challenge with, and that was part of the fun of writing the piece, is that it's not necessarily about who they can target, because the challenge with restricted free agency is that the original team has the right to match. So I think what you do is you cast a wide net for all the guys that you think are worthy of a max, let's say Kawhi Leonard, Jimmy Butler, Draymond Green, guys like that, who are going to get, they're going to get that money. And you say, hey, if you want to get it from somewhere, you can get it from us. And then you hope that the other team doesn't match. I think that that's the way to do it. I'm not as big a fan of Brandon Knight and Chris Middleton compared to those guys, so I wouldn't offer them the max. But, you could think about enough to make another team sweat. And what the other thing that does, which I think is important, and people don't always think about this, is that it makes the agents think of you in a little bit of a more positive light, and then that can help how their other clients look at the Sixers. And so you go after those guys, the guys that you target aggressively. You might not get any of them. Maybe you get one. I mean, who knows? You never know if a team's going to decide to cheap out. I mean, I don't think the Warriors are going to do that with Draymond Green. Even if there's a 1% chance, it's worth it. And so you do that. And then if somebody comes, that's great. If not, what you showed everybody is that you're willing to spend, you're willing to be aggressive, and hopefully that helps you in 2016. And the goal with all of that is to be smart about it, but make sure that you don't get a ton of bad money on your books, though the Sixers are so open that it would be hard for them to put a lot of bad money on their books.
Yeah, for sure. They have so much money to spend. And like you said in the article, they don't even have to really necessarily get these guys, as long as they can drive up the price tag for the other teams that want to keep them. But, I mean, Sam Hinkie's not really in a rush to do anything, as we have all seen. Now, we know what the opinion is here in Philadelphia. What is the national view on Sam Hinkie? Do a lot of teams really dislike the way that he's going about rebuilding the Sixers?
I feel like the people I talk to who are more, if you want to call it establishment, don't really like how brazen they've been about it. I think the one that struck a lot of people was the KJ McDaniels trade. I personally thought it was a reasonable thing. He's going to probably get more money this summer, though his value obviously dropped because of what happened with the Rockets, sadly for him. But I think that in a lot of ways, that perception doesn't it doesn't really matter as long as it doesn't make its way to the players. And really what that to me is about is if the players think that you're cheap or something. But I don't think the Sixers can break that perception if it exists pretty quickly. And, you know, if teams are uneasy with the way that you're doing it, they're still going to, if you offer them a trade that's good for them, they're still going to take it. You know, they're not going to pass on something because for whatever reason they have some sort of thing with the GM. So they may, but I wouldn't worry about it at all.
Yeah, I mean, KJ McDaniels is really the one player who I kind of wanted to hold on to, but he had one of those I saw he has like a really unique contract that not a lot of rookies fall into. But as far as Michael Carter Williams being traded, you know, that's kind of irrelevant to me personally.
I thought the Michael Carter Williams trade was the best trade that anybody made at the deadline, and I'm talking about the Sixers side of it because Michael's a fine player. He's doing pretty well. I'm happy for him, but he's not one of those, you know, like I don't think of him as, you know, like a key starter on a top level team. And so you get a pick that will probably be a better asset than he is, and you're going to get them on a more cost control basis. So when the Sixers are going to be building for, you know, their next playoff run, you'll be getting a guy who's still going to be cheap as opposed to Carter Williams, who will be getting his raise right around then.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely an excellent point. And like you said, he was never going to be necessarily a superstar, so might as well go with some better potential. But speaking about potential, in this upcoming draft, the Sixers hold probably a top five pick. Do you think there's any true game changers, maybe outside of the known
Okafor,
because we probably have the strength at that position. But who do you see as the real game changer out of the draft class?
This class is hard. I mean, I don't see one of those, you know, like I don't see a guy who I think has a real high chance of getting an MVP. But the guy who I like the most, including Okafor, is Karl Anthony Towns. He's an unusual player in the sense that he's a very strong rim protector, which, of course, the Sixers don't necessarily need right now with the way that Nerlens Noel played. But what makes him different than that is that he has a nice jump shot and he's very athletic. So what he could be, a lot of people compare him to Al Horford, which I think is a fine comparison. And he is starting working on his jump shot a little earlier than Al did. And we've seen that in this series that when he hits it, it's good. So he could be what, you know, the term that's out there now is a stretch four, meaning a power forward. He could be a stretch five. I'm not as high on D'Angelo Russell as a lot of people, though I do like him a lot. I think that it's very hard for guys like him to reach that MVP discussion, but I think he's going to be at least a solid starter in the league for a while. I really like Moutier, but I haven't seen enough of him, honestly, to really love him. I mean, I could with more time. So, you know, I think this is a class that you go for the best player available. I think that's what Hinkie and the Sixers have done the whole time. You go for the guy that you believe will be the best because you never know what other teams are going to offer, and you want to have the best combination of assets. And then, you know, once your team is closer to competing, maybe you think about need a little bit more, but I don't think you do right now.
Yeah, and I'm actually one of the people that want D'Angelo Russell to come here. And when I saw that picture that got posted of him and Nerlens Noel hanging out over the weekend, it definitely got my little fanboy inside of me jumping around. But before we take up too much of your time and before we get you out of here, I want to ask everybody that we talk to, you know, about the NBA. Has anybody heard anything about Dario Saric over in Turkey? I believe he's playing. I'm really curious as to see how he's doing, and I haven't really been able to find too much information on him. Do you know how he's doing over in the in that European league?
Sadly for you, I do not. I liked Saric. The amount that I got to see him, I got to see footage of him playing in international ball the last couple of years, but I haven't seen much of him this year. It's actually, that does happen sometimes when after a guy gets drafted, then, you know, the draft circles aren't following them as closely, and that's generally the easiest way, at least for me as a West Coaster, to keep track of Euro talents. But yeah, I mean, I would hope that he's developing and everything like that, but I apologize that I don't have more news for you.
Oh yeah, I mean it's hard to get the information on a player that's playing overseas in, you know, the off season when it's the off season here. I need to know how he's doing, because a 6'10" guy that can shoot like that is exactly what I want to see on my 76ers team. Let me tell you that.
Yeah, and he can handle the ball and pass it too, which is nice. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily run an offense through him, but if you have him as kind of a secondary guy when things break down and everything like that, and he can play power forward, I think that's a nice fit for what Philly has now, and I think it's a nice fit for just a good basketball team in general.
Definitely. And Danny, thanks for taking the time tonight to join us and jump on the program and talk NBA. We really appreciate it, and we hope to have you on again in the future. You know, hopefully if the Warriors make it to the NBA Finals, we're going to have you back on to break that down for us.
Well, thank you very much for having me, and just let me know if you'd like me to come back on.
Definitely. Thanks a lot, Danny. Everybody, that's Danny LaRue of the Sporting News. He also jumps around on the radio stations out in the Bay Area, breaking down Warriors and the 49ers.
And I'll tell you right now, especially, I bet someone like Danny could definitely feel a Sixers fan's pain.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
You know, how long it's been since, you know, the Warriors have really touched the creek. It was a long time before Steph Curry and them took over down there.
Oh, it was, for sure.
And now you see, you know, you see the Sixers playing, and you see how teams like the Rockets and the Clippers have kind of sprawled up there out of nowhere.
Definitely.
So it gives you confidence for us Sixer fans going forward to kind of dream big and see what we could be in 3 or 4 years.
Yeah. Yo, you know what time it is?
Uh-oh.
Time for our new segment.
Knee-jerk reactions?
Absolutely.
Oh.
So for all of you that might have missed out on Monday's show, we are introducing a new segment to the show. It's called Knee-Jerk Reactions. Because, you know, Mike here, he doesn't necessarily keep up on current events or pretty much anything that's not related to the NFL. He just,
I like basketball. I like other things, but, like, you know, what kind of sunglasses is somebody wearing? I can care less.
Yeah. So for our new segment, you know, I went around, checked out the most common thing, like, you know, CNN's front page to find some news articles.
Bah.
And we got some headlines, and he's got a minute to address these headlines with his first reaction. So we're going to start off.
Say the truth comes quick.
Oh, absolutely. So we're going to start off right here with University of California, San Diego students for this acting class. They're required to take their final completely nude.
They're required?
Well, they're required to be nude either physically or emotionally. I don't really know
what
that means.
What does emotionally mean?
But apparently this professor's been doing it for decades.
San Diego State?
University of California, San Diego.
They do it. You know, and in any other state, I would be offended by that. But they do it different out in San Diego, California. That is one of, I guess, if there's a place you could be emotionally naked, it's in nature's vagina.
Whale's vagina.
No, nature's vagina, the world's vagina.
No,
down
no, I'm
in
saying
San Diego.
Isn't that what San Diego means, whale's vagina?
I don't know. I've never heard of that.
I'll look that up after I give you this next one.
All right, let's move on.
All right. So in Colorado, on June 11th.
I like everything about Colorado.
On June 11th, there's a barbecue place, all
right? Right.
That is giving White Appreciation Day 10% off to all white people.
Oh, my God.
His reasoning is that there's there's African American Heritage Month. There's Hispanic Heritage Month.
Stop.
He goes, why can't we? And the thing is, the guy's Mexican. It's not like he's a white guy. He's Mexican.
Oh, he's not a white guy.
No, he's not a white guy.
Oh, he'll get away with this then.
Yeah.
He will get away. People will snicker and will curse him out silently, but there will be no public humiliation.
Yeah,
Now, if me and Justin were to own the shop, like I would never think to do anything like
absolutely
that.
Absolutely not.
Because, and when people have said this before, this is what I say back to them. Yes, yes. We have 1 month where we talk about Hispanic. We have 1 month where we talk about Black history. You know what the other 10 months are? White History Month. There's like every fifth day is like some holiday for some white guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We get our look in the history books. Even the black people are white.
Oh yeah. June 14th in L.A. Nintendo is introducing their World Championship video game tournament that hasn't occurred in 25 years. Now, don't know what system might have been out 25 years ago, but Nintendo is bringing the tournament back, June 14th in L.A.
What system on? Do they even have a system anymore?
It's just Nintendo. I don't know. I don't know. I play Xbox.
Right. That's what I mean. I play a real system. So anything Nintendo, unless it's like Super Nintendo, I'll play Super Nintendo all day. And if anybody actually wants to show me where they have like a Nintendo 64 or like a Super Nintendo, I will buy that. You Twitter or Instagram or Facebook, Michelle, I'm going to take this question and say this. I want an old Nintendo. I don't want the Wii. The Wii stinks.
All right, let me just break down this myth real quick.
All right.
It is fact. San Diego is German for whale's vagina.
It is fact?
Fact.
Okay.
Fact.
Then not far as off from nature's vagina, then.
No. Lester Holt, he's the guy that's taken over for Brian Williams on the NBC News. I don't know if you know all that nonsense. Well, anyway.
Vaguely.
He did his show from a helicopter over the...
Oh, his
train
first
crash.
Show?
No, not his first show. He's been doing it for like 2 months.
Oh, he did.
He anchored the whole show from a helicopter over...
How far will these guys go?
Well, he was,
for like shock value.
Well, he was over top of the railroad crash. And he just said, F it, I'll
host from here.
I'll host from the helicopter above that.
That's pretty ridiculous. That yeah. You would host a show from on top of
NBC
the helicopter.
NBC Nightly News. Like
people are suffering. Like this, people go in the ambulance and this jerk off spending... $100,000 in fuel to show you like constant video and lie to you about what's going on because he doesn't even know. He's just inferring. They'll just run a retraction in the paper.
All the rioting in Baltimore. I assume so. But
recently,
the estimated is $9 to $10 million worth of damage.
That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money.
That's a situation that's out of control. You know, police brutality is something that has been going on a long time. And who knows? You know, we live in this sheltered world.
Yeah. Ready for the next one?
Yeah.
All right. This one's going to really piss you off. John Singleton. I don't know if you remember him. He was one of the trade pieces that to the Astros for Hunter Pence.
Right.
Well, in his game, I believe he's like he's working his way through the minor leagues in AAA. He had 10 RBIs Wednesday night, he had 10 RBIs.
Okay, so the guy we traded with the guy that we traded to get nobody is doing good?
Yes.
This is another slap in the face for Ruben Amaro.
He's 23 right now, and we traded him when he was like 18 or 19. He didn't wait for him to go up.
I just hate every move. I would like to know. I want to look at every move that he ever did. And it'd probably be like 80% wrong. Like there's no closer way than anyone who single-handedly destroyed an organization than Ruben Amaro. He is the worst GM in history. And if you don't think I'm right, you find me another GM who inherited a dynasty and then proceeded never to win another title, never to even to get worse every year.
Oh, yeah. Papelbon is the Phillies' all-time save leader with 113 saves.
Isn't that disgraceful?
Yeah.
That is pretty disgraceful. I mean, yay for Papelbon. He's a great save. He's a great closer. Don't get me wrong. I was happy. He was really could have been a big piece if we had the team around him. The back end of this bullpen, really, and that's the sad part. We're pretty good in our first start and two pitchers. Our back end's pretty good. You know, there's a few middle relief guys, but that's everywhere. You know, if you're a middle relief pitcher, you're not that great. You would be a deeper pitcher. You know what I mean? You'd be a starter. You know, long relief, that means you're a starter who wasn't that good.
For sure. And here's your last one. It involves the Discovery Channel and the Pittsburgh Penguins Twitter account. Discovery Channel says, you know, they just, you know how the crew does a random fast all day? On average, the Emperor Penguins grow to be 3.8 feet tall, to which the Pittsburgh Pirates responded, really? As of May 13th, 2015, the average Pittsburgh Penguin grows to be 6'1". No. Well, the Discovery Channel responds. That's strange. Observations show no penguin activity currently on ice in Pittsburgh. Where did they go?
Damn. Disney just shook them. That's called a billion-dollar comeback. Not only was
Discovery Channel, not even Disney, it was Discovery Channel.
Oh, not Disney. I'm sorry. $1 million comeback then. But still, damn. Do you know what Pittsburgh did?
As far as I know, they did not respond.
They discovered that they stink.
I actually did some research on the Penguins the other day, which makes no sense because I don't even like hockey. But they're getting up
terrible.
There in age.
Oh, the whole Penguin team.
Yeah.
They're older. They're going to be stinky soon. I mean, stinkier than they are. But then again, one thing the Pittsburgh Penguins were able to do was win a cup.
Did they win two cups? I think they did.
Did they win two?
No, they didn't.
1-1, right?
He lost. He's been to a few.
Right.
But I don't think he...
You know what? That's one more than us Flyers fans have had. I'll tell you that. Like right now, let's put it this way. I ask you a question now, since that was the end. I have a question that came up on me. All right. As an Eagles fan, now this is probably going to be an easy question, but think about it. In the 10 years that Andy Reid was here,
14,
whatever, the 10 years that mattered, he went to 5 NFC championships and 1 Super Bowl. We were constantly winning division titles and were competitive every single year. Now, our division competitor, the New York Giants, stunk. What, 11 out of those 14 years, yet brought home 2 Lombardi trophies. Is it easy to say that that's way more successful, even though Andy Reid had 10 winning seasons?
Who else? Andy Reid and who?
Andy Reid versus Tom Coughlin. Would you basically switch the 2 Super Bowls for the Andy Reid time?
Yes.
Even though you wouldn't be competitive in 11 of 14 years, probably.
Yes.
And that's easy, right?
Yes.
It just goes to show you, like, and that's what I'll say for the Flyers. We've been competitive for a long time.
Penguins played into one of them.
Right. We've been competitive as the Phillies for a long time. We've been competitive with the Eagles. We've been competitive with the Flyers, but we have not brought it home. The Phillies won one, but with that team, and especially the way baseball has been set up over the last 10 years, that was prime for a dynasty, and we didn't come through. So my point really is in this is that these long-tenured teams that go perennially to the playoffs and they get knocked out are not going to be remembered. You're going to remember the Giants in 10 years more. You're going to remember Eli Manning more than Donovan McNabb. But if I'm starting a franchise, give me Donovan McNabb over Eli, to be honest.
I agree 100%. We got breaking news right now. Kyrie Irving was just helped to the locker room.
And the plot thickens. I'll tell you right now, without Kyrie Irving actually on the floor, I mean, how many shots does that mean J.R. Smith has to take? That's not good. You want J.R. Smith to have like 5-10 shots. Hopefully he hits 5 of them. If not, oh well, if he misses 10. You know what I mean? He's either a guy who puts you over the hump or you got to make up for it. He's taking 15-20 shots a game. He goes, ask the Knicks what happens when he wasn't on the shit. When Carmelo is going, you know, 35 points, but J.R. Smith is hit 2 for 15. How many games you win? Not many. And that's a great point. The Cavs really, it's sad. LeBron leaves, waits for the Cavs to get good, comes back, and what happens?
How about what
they all get hurt? What
yeah.
Isn't this? You want to know if there's karma in the world? Because guess what happened to LeBron James right now? He's back, stuck in Cleveland.
With no help.
I mean, he's living in the Twilight Zone.
Yeah, I'm trying to find
him. He escaped. Why would he go back? He should have came to the Sixers. He could have been here with no help. We'd be playing the Bulls right now. It would be the same thing. Even this bum team, it don't matter. Whatever, you put LeBron on any team in the East, they're in the conference championship.
I agree. I actually agree.
Not the West. I didn't say the West. You heard me. The East. There's no strength. It's LeBron versus the East every year. That's what we've been talking about for 5 years. This is the 5th year.
We are going to have a guest at 9 o'clock, but it is not our original guest. We will be having Devon Givens of 97.5 join us. Sixers beat guy over there. NBA guru, really, if you think about it. He's a producer over at 97.5. I've met him a few times. He's cool as hell. And he will be calling us in about 10 minutes or so to continue talking Sixers NBA. Sure. If you have any questions, definitely get them ready. Anybody out there listening, got questions, give us a call, 347-857-4467. Hit me on Twitter, on Facebook. We got Devon giving us a call soon, breaking down more NBA knowledge.
I'm going to take a little break here and go Eagles. Because I can't go the whole hour
actually,
talking about them.
We can have good news, though, is that all the Eagles draft picks are signed.
Yep, and Jordan Hicks, the last guy signed today, and that's a big big signing right there. And now I'm excited about the depth of this roster. And I know that's a term that, you know, gets thrown around in the NFL, but the teams who win are teams who win with depth. That's how you win in the NFL. Everybody's going to have injuries. Everybody's going to get knocked around. Nobody's healthy through a 17-game season. When you have starters and backups and third strings who can play, that makes your special teams better. They led the league in special teams. Their front seven is going to be better this year. Their secondary, I mean, as much as you want to say there's still questions to be answered, it has to be better. It was historically bad last year. Even a small, minute improvement is going to look like a whole new defense. You're going to be able to see Billy Davis and Chip Kelly be able to call the game they want to call now. Now they finally have the guys they want to do it. So now you really get to see the truest test of what Chip Kelly is going to have and who he is as a football coach in the National Football League. This is the year to see it.
Oh, yeah. While we're talking about Chip, let's address the rule changes he came up with. Well, not that he himself, you know, invented.
Him and Belichick. And that is who I want.
Hold on. Let me preface that.
I want to have the guy on my team who Bill Belichick,
Hold on. I got to preface it by saying it said that the Patriots and the Eagles, they didn't address it by name, but who runs this organization?
Chip and Belichick.
So, rule number one is that they want to change the two-point conversion from the two-yard line to the one-yard line. Now, I don't know if that'll get passed, honestly, because a lot of teams are opposing it, but, you know, Tebow time. That's all I got to say for that.
Tebow time.
The second rule, which is actually more likely than not to pass, is that on two-point conversions, if the defense gets a turnover, you can return it for a touchdown.
And I like that rule, because if you're on the field and it's live ball, you know, you should be able to take it. It's just that simple. A PAT, no. I get that. They're not going to do it for, you know, just if they're kicking a pat. But if you go for it on your 2 points of first, you should be able to get to 2 points either way. That could be a huge swing in a game nowadays that are won by field goals in the last minute.
Yeah, I mean, football is one of the games where you can score at any given play, offense or defense. In fact, baseball is the only sport that you really can't do it. And you know, that's actually going to be a good question that I'm going to start asking people. I'm going to post it online right now. I want to ask you this question, too. If there was one rule you could change about any sport, what would it be?
Basketball. And my rule would be you hit ball first, no foul.
Regardless.
Because if you're going to jump in the air and dunk at the basket, that's your prerogative because you know who's there. Just like in the NFL when you used to jump over the middle, or just like even in soccer. If you hit the ball first in soccer, that guy could go flying up in the air. But I was going for the ball. The defender and the offender should always have the right to score or to stop the score even. It has to be completely even.
I don't know how I would do it yet, but I would find some way to implement scoring for the defense in baseball.
I mean, the defense can definitely affect scoring in baseball.
No, but I'm saying you'd be able to score while on defense. Like, while you're in the field, you'll be able to score runs. I don't know how I figured it out yet, but
Because I would say baseball, but I mean, next to hockey is the lowest scoring game, but hockey is way more in-your-face, fast pace than baseball.
For sure.
So, yeah, I would definitely rather go baseball. I think that would be it. I'd almost be like basketball.
Yeah, like I don't really. I'd have to really sit down and think out like the logistics of it.
Yeah.
But that's what I would do. Because, I mean, it's a one-run game in the ninth inning, and you're in the field, you're the home team, you still get the bottom of the ninth. But if you don't hit that run in, well, I'd find a way that you could
get the run in the field. That would change.
Oh, that would change so much, though. I
know. When you think about one rule to change, you got to make it.
You got to make it.
It's got to be small. It's got to be like something that's going to change, like okay, for the NFL, like a rule change would be the NFL, like the Calvin Johnson rule overturned.
Oh, yeah.
Like, especially in the end zone, I would say the second you should freeze frame it, if any point the receiver has 2 feet down with the ball in their hand, touchdown.
Oh, yeah.
You shouldn't be able to knock the ball out of their hands after the catch in the end zone. It's too late.
I agree. Real quick, you hear what Michael Irvin said?
Oh, let's hear it.
Said that the Eagles should be the favorite for the division, and that he needs to separate his head from his heart, and that DeMarco Murray will put the Eagles over the top to win the division.
Well, I mean, just based off the fact that you're subtracting him from Dallas and you're adding him to Philadelphia. Now, we had LeSean McCoy, so the addition that puts our team isn't, let's say, much better.
It's not as dramatic.
But then again, when you look at the two games that we lost early in the year to San Fran and Arizona, and we were on, you know, a goal, we're all right on the goal line twice. You know, third down in San Francisco and a fourth down in Arizona. With DeMarco Murray, there are probably 2 touchdowns and 2 wins. So never underestimate the power of a power back. Uh-huh. And I think he matches up better. But the biggest thing is to take him away from Dallas. Now, yes, you have the great offensive line. You got Dez Bryant. You got all that. But guess what? If Tony Romo drops back and throws 30 or more passes a game, you're going to have 15 or more interceptions. That is the stats. If you look back on him, yes, he throws for yards. He wins games. But guess what? The only guy I know to do 500 yards, 5 touchdowns, and cost the team the game. And that game I'm talking about is with Peyton Manning the year before, where he threw an interception very late in the game in his own thing after throwing 500 yards and 5 touchdowns.
I remember that, and I will always remember that game because
he made a Dallas Cowboy look bad.
That, and I played against Tony Romo in fantasy that week.
In fantasy, it didn't matter about that interception.
No, he put up like 85 points.
But you know what? To be fair, most Dallas fans live in fantasy land.
Jerry World.
Jerry World. I call it fantasy land. I don't like saying his name. He's like,
I need some like really trippy music to play behind. Like whenever I say Jerry World, you're like,
Twilight music.
Yeah, it's like just crazy. I'll find something so that whenever I say Jerry World, you know that you're.
Sadly, they're in our division, so we'll be saying Jerry World pretty often.
I hope.
Sadly,
I might add that to my regular vocabulary.
You live in Jerry World.
Say like a bunch of different accents, make out little different names for it.
But Jerry Jones will like it. He'll be doing it himself in a couple of months.
Like Evan Turner, boom, like, hello, Jerry World. I hate Evan Turner so much.
I'll tell you, I will not. I know Dallas got us this last year, and they had to get their one. Tony Romo needed his one playoff run before he could, like, shut everybody up. And, I just don't think that this Cowboys will ever win a Super Bowl with Jerry Jones as owner again. Now that he has to build a team, now that he's doing everything, now that he's the GM. He's the GM, Justin.
His title.
What?
Who?
Jerry Jones.
Oh, yeah, I know. He's been the GM.
That's ridiculous. You can't do that. What if I won it? What if I'm the GM of the Philadelphia Eagles? They're going to stink. I am not qualified. Even if I have $10 billion, Bill Gates couldn't run Saints.
I agree. He would want the Seahawks anyway, but
I'm not. I'm
the
just.
Point.
I'm just yeah. Beside the point. I'm just saying. I'm even going with the. You know. Well, I guess the Seahawks have been as good as anybody. But yeah. I just don't see why. Like I get wanting to be on the sidelines and all that. But like the GM doesn't go on the sidelines.
Not till the end of the game. No, you're right. He doesn't. I mean, why are you trying to justify what Jerry Jones does? Is the better question.
Who, me?
Yeah.
I'm not trying to justify it. That's the last thing I want to do.
Okay.
Justify it.
All right. Just checking.
I'm just saying that he's single-handedly prevented his team from winning Super Bowls for like the last 6 years. It's not Tony Romo. Could you win with that pressure? It's like having like your dad over your shoulder, like every snap.
Oh, it's terrible.
Are you gonna throw a touchdown this time, Tony? Hey, Tony, you better throw that touchdown, Tony.
Yo,
we're counting on you, Jerry.
Yo, who has it worse, him or Jason Garrett?
Jason Garrett has the best job in the world because he stinks. He's not an NFL coach, I don't think. He should be an offensive coordinator, to be honest. That's probably where I'd put him, an offensive coordinator.
Did you know that he was Troy Aikman's backup?
Oh, well. Thanks.
I'm just letting you know.
Well, what was it? Matt Castle that was Carson Palmer's backup?
Matt Castle was Tom Brady's backup.
No, I'm saying in college.
Oh,
Was it Matt Castle the one?
No. He was,
Who was the one backup?
Matt Leinart.
Matt Leinart.
He was Matt Leinart's backup.
Matt Leinart. But I'm saying he was the guy at USC. He was there for basically backed up his entire college career.
Yeah, it was Matt Castle.
Into an NFL job.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. But,
There were so many USC quarterbacks who just came out one after the other.
I mean, when you had the best receivers and running backs in college football year after year after year, I'm pretty sure I could have got drafted in the NFL if I played quarterback for USC. And that's not any kind of quote against my ability to throw football either. I'll tell you that very much. But we have our next guest calling in. He'll be with us just in a few seconds. So we're going to kick it back to NBA. And I'm waiting to see. We're going to see if we can get an update on this Kyrie injury status for tonight. Because if he can't come back in, not only do the Bulls have a great chance of winning tonight, but Game 7 would be tough as well. Without, you know, now your second and third options are gone. And like our last guest said, Tristan Thompson is not really a guy who's going to step up and be a scorer. And you've seen before, we've seen in the playoffs that when LeBron is asked to take more than 20 shots a game, 30 shots a game, he'll win you half the games, but the other half, he can't do it every night. It's not his thing. He wants to facilitate. He wants to show how good his teammates are. And if they keep falling, he's going to run out of guys to pass to. You know, the NBA is not that deep. So when you lose two or three quality guys like them that you're counting on, everybody else on the team is exposed. And I think that's what you might see tonight. I'll tell you right now, I wish I'll be watching that game pretty soon and then catch the second half after the show. But I'm telling you, I'm more worried about this Rockets game tonight. Because like I said, I think the Clippers are going to take it tonight and it'll be over, but if they don't, and if the Rockets win tonight, that's serious again.
Oh, definitely. But we got our next guest up on the line. We got Devon Givens, 97.5, producer down there. You can check him out. He's also got NBA knowledge that is second to none, and that's why we're bringing him on here to talk NBA. Hey, Devon, thanks for taking time out to join us tonight. You're on with Justin and Mike. How's it going?
Hey, guys. How you doing? Thanks for having me.
No problem. Thank you. Now going tonight, we're in the middle of this Bulls-Cavs game, and we see Kyrie going down, and not sure if he's going to come back or not. How big do you think an impact that could play for the rest of this series?
Oh, I think it's a huge loss if he can't play. He's already you know, a little injured as it was, and he's playing with a sore foot and still giving it a go and just, you know, getting whatever treatment he needs to stay on the floor. Obviously, the Cavs are the second best player behind LeBron James, and with you already missing Kevin Love for the rest of the playoffs, it's a huge loss to not have Kyrie Irving on the floor, because when LeBron does get a little bogged down, there is that one player on the roster left that you can still give the ball to and say, go get me a basket when we need it. J.R. Smith can score a little bit, but he needs the ball to be given to him, or, you know, some sort of, you know, Kyrie Irving or LeBron James creating a play for him to make it. So if Kyrie Irving is down for the rest of this series, this could be very tough.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm checking out online right now that we have it listed as probable. But, you know, no injury report that comes out is a definite. But I really feel like that even if Kyrie's out, LeBron can still win this series himself. Is that wishful thinking on my part, or can LeBron just will himself past the Bulls?
No, we've seen it done before when he took the 07 Cavs with a bunch of decent players to the NBA Finals, ultimately being swept by the Spurs. But LeBron James is LeBron James. There's a reason why he's an all-time great, because of the fact that he can do things just like you just said. And I wouldn't put it past him either to put the team on his back, somehow get it done. Now, I did see him clutching his back a little bit after a jump ball with Kurt Heinrich when they got tied up a little bit. Now, that could be something to cause for concern, but, you know, heading into the halftime, he can get some sort of treatment just to check and make sure everything is okay. But I don't disagree. And if that is the case, if he is able to close this game out, close the series out, you know, a couple of days rest for both he and Kyrie to rest up for the next, for the Eastern Conference Finals.
Definitely. And for the Eastern Conference Finals, I have the Cavaliers winning, even with Kyrie out. But I really think that the Wizards are going to win that series between the Hawks. Do the Wizards finally, are they finally growing up?
You would think so. The way that they've played, John Wall has stepped his game up. He's an all-star, so I can't necessarily say he hasn't taken his game to another level, but getting to the second round, playing against the top team of the East, and playing with the injury that he has with the broken hand, coming back and playing in the game, even though he's he probably should not be playing. If it was the regular season, I'm sure they would have him sit out, but it's the playoffs for a right to play for the Eastern Conference Finals. So, of course, they've grown up. Paul Pierce has been a tremendous help for those young players to show how it's done. And I still go back to the Jackie McMullen interview on ESPN.com where Paul Pierce revealed how he was pretty revealing about a lot of things, including his time in Boston and the players on that squad, but also with this current Washington Wizards team, talking about how John Wall, Bradley Beal, and even Otto Porter, you know, the young guys, that they have the talent, they just have to want it, and they see it. So being that they've been able to see it firsthand, Paul Pierce hitting game-winning shots, doing the things he did against the Raptors when they ultimately swept them, they have grown in front of our eyes. Now, I disagree. I think the Hawks do ultimately take the series, but Washington will not go down without a fight.
Oh, definitely. And I actually agree with you with the Hawks. But who do you think the team who's going to come out of the East? I know there's a lot of injuries. You don't know who exactly is going to be healthy. But who do you see as the favorite right now?
Even with the Kevin Love injury, I still had Cleveland coming out of the East just because of LeBron James and Kyrie Irving. Of course, we don't know what Kyrie Irving's injury status is, but LeBron James in a weak East, and I understand the Atlanta Hawks are the top seed, but they have struggled up to this point, which is why you chose the Washington Wizards to advance to the Eastern Conference Finals. But with LeBron James able to win at least two games by himself, I still think that Cleveland is the hands-on favorite to make it to the finals. Now, when they get to the finals, that's a whole other story. I think whoever comes out of the West takes it anyway. But when you ask who comes out of the East, I still give it to the Cavs.
Yeah, it's going to definitely be hard to beat LeBron James. I mean, what's he been in the finals? This will be the fifth year in a row, so
yeah,
it's going to be really hard to bet against him. But speaking of that, who do you have coming out of the West? I mean, we've seen some great games and some great series. Still a
Absolutely.
Lot of basketball left. But is it still the Warriors as a favorite?
I still have to go with the Warriors. The ultimate test to me was always going to be the Spurs or the Grizzlies. The Clippers have shown some life. My problem with the Clippers in the past years, a lot of Chris Paul taking a lot of heat for not helping his team advance to past the second round. My complaint was always Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan, as you guys said, you know, not growing. And when you talked about the Wizards, we see them finally taking that next step in growth. Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan always shown what they can do in the regular season, but when it came to the playoffs, they never gave what the Clippers ultimately needed. And of course, with the supporting cast of J.J. Redick, Matt Barnes, and whomever, Jamal Crawford, they have their roles, but when Chris Paul gets bogged down because he may be drawn a double team or what have you, it's up to your next two guys to make those necessary plays to get you to help you advance. And I always thought Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan did not do that. Now, when you saw Chris Paul out earlier in the series, you saw Blake Griffin take that next step, maybe getting a triple double, getting a win on the road. So now the Clippers have shown, even with the bench help and the supporting cast, Austin Rivers coming in, giving them big minutes and scoring when they need it. So I do think the Clippers ultimately serve, if the Warriors get past the Grizzlies, which is not an easy task because they do have everyone available. Tony Allen supposedly is going to play the next game. If they get past the Grizzlies, the Clippers are going to be a tough out, but I ultimately believe that Golden State will get to the finals. They have to be on shooting, though, which their defense has to be on par to lead to the scoring because, as you know, if you miss with a lot of jump shots and you don't get anything inside, it's going to be really tough to beat the Clippers because DeAndre Jordan is protecting that rim.
Oh, and that's obvious. That's a great point. It really matches up well for what the Golden State Warriors are trying to do. You've even seen with this Grizzlies series, you've seen that they've been up and down when they've been able to shoot well, and not necessarily even just Curry and Thompson, but the rest of the team to open them up. And
yeah.
You've almost seen the tale of two series.
Absolutely.
But,
absolutely.
I just want to change pace a little bit. There's a new Sixers logo. I just wanted to get your thoughts on this.
I'm okay with it. They've pretty much stuck with the tradition as they stated a few months back when they released that mini video with Dr. J, Wilt Chamberlain, and Billy Cunningham. They kind of let everyone know that this was the direction that they were going into, still keeping it within the history of the organization, keeping some things in the past. The logo is pretty cool. I've heard that you see different things. They tried to copy off of the Nets. Is it on par with the Philadelphia Union? Did they steal? I mean, listen, how many different logos can you have? And especially when you're going to keep the traditional basketball with the 76ers in the middle and all that, how many different ways can you get it? So I thought it was a nice touch to add to Philadelphia, the few stars that they had, and get it out of that box. You know, you feel like you're a little boxed in, very limited. So I do like the new logo. I really like that alternate secondary logo, whatever they want to call it, of the Ben Franklin. I don't know how they incorporate it, maybe just on merchandise for sales for the fans. I don't know how they'll really incorporate it uniform-wise, but I really do like that. And I hope when the uniforms do come out that they go back to the red road versus the blue road. I do like the blue, but I really like the blue as the alternate, primarily with the red as the go-to uni on the road.
Oh, yeah, I'm definitely a big fan of the red, too. And I also am a huge fan of the Ben Franklin basketball. We were saying before the show, I would get a hat, a shirt,
yeah,
a hoodie, shorts. I'd get everything with that logo on it.
Yeah, now, but Justin and Mike, do you see, I can't think of a way where they can incorporate it onto the uniform. Do you guys see any? I don't see any way. Maybe on the shorts, maybe. That's it.
Yeah, like maybe on the shorts, like on the corner, but I don't think they're going to be able to put that in the jersey. Definitely not. And if they do, then I might have to side with Stephen A. that it's not the best logo. But
yeah, it's pretty
so
cool.
So we have the draft lottery next week, and I want D'Angelo Russell here. What are your thoughts on that?
I would agree with that. Now, it all depends on where they land in the lottery. If you get the top two picks, my opinion, well, specifically number one, if you get the number one pick, if you can't trade it, if you don't get anything that you like back in the trade and you keep the number one pick, it's going to be really difficult to pass up on one of the two bigs. And my big that I would choose is Carl Anthony Towns just because of the versatility that he has. And when you think about placing him next to Joel Embiid, if you have Joel Embiid at the center position, Carl Anthony Towns at the power forward, it just matches up perfectly. Now, I like Nerlens Noel, so that poses a problem, but really, is that really a bad problem to have three bigs? Ultimately, they all want to be on the floor. You may have a problem trying to appease everyone in terms of minutes, but you worry about that later. They do need a point guard. Once they traded Michael Carter Williams at the trade deadline, they obviously need a point guard. I was a big Emmanuel Mudiay fan last year after the draft ended. You guys know about John Marks from our station, and John had me on the show, and I immediately told him, because he looked ahead and he asked me, is Okafor the main target? And I said, you know what? Target Emmanuel Mudiay just because of his obviously, I wasn't a big Michael Carter Williams fan, so I looked at the possibility of him being moved. You've heard his names and rumblings and different trade rumors in the past, so it was going to come up again eventually, and it did. He was ultimately moved. So Emmanuel Mudiay was always my target. Now, we haven't seen him. D'Angelo Russell did what he did on a college level, and I really, really like the potential that he has. So right now I lean towards D'Angelo Russell, depending on where you fall, but I still have a keen eye on what Emmanuel Mudiay does in these pre-draft workouts and all.
Oh, definitely. I actually saw some YouTube videos of Mudiay working out, and his upside is outrageous. He could step in and turn into an all-star, perennial all-star in the coming years. He has everything that you need in a draft prospect. And if the Sixers end up with him, I would absolutely be fine with Mudiay. It would be
sure.
Great.
Yeah.
So you don't want to take up too much of your time. We really appreciate you jumping on here. But I have to ask everybody, and you're more knowledgeable in the NBA than most people that are around here. So is there anything I need to know about Dario Saric? How's he doing? A 6'10" shooter that can ball handle like that, I need him on the Sixers. Is there any updates that we have about how he's doing over there?
Well, apparently he's been playing pretty well. He's one of few rookies, youngest player of the month in how their league goes. My thing with Dario Saric is I really would have liked to see him come over to the NBA and play for the Sixers after he was drafted last summer. But with the contract that he signed in Turkey, that didn't allow that to happen. And with the 2 years left on his deal in Turkey and a big buyout possibility, the NBA only allows the current team to play a certain amount, and Dario Saric has to pay a majority of that buyout to come to the NBA. The interesting thing about him is he compared himself more to a Lamar Odom, Tony Kukoc, Boris Diaw type of player. And that's all well and good. Defensively, he's a little slow of foot. Obviously, you would like to see him a little better with that, but with the potential to ball handle and to get everyone else involved and allow, as you guys may say, let's say D'Angelo Russell is the Sixers draft pick in June, and we saw the scoring capabilities that he does have on the college level, and we know he'd come in and, possibly get some things done on this level. It is nice to have someone like Dario Saric's ability to allow D'Angelo Russell or Emmanuel Mudiay, whoever it may be, or Robert Covington spotting up outside the arc to get to the basket and create for others. And, hey, as you said, at 6'10", he can create – you can run the offense through him, whether it be at the elbow, whether it be on a post-up. There's a lot of different things that they can do with him as the feature in a particular offensive set. So doing well over there. Not sure if he's going to be able to come over this season due to the buyout situations, but it will be interesting to see ultimately if he is on the roster to see how he fits in with the rest of the young guys. When you look at that and you say Joel Embiid, Nerlens Noel, Dario Saric, and whomever else they get, it is real promising for the Sixers. But I need to see it, though. Just like you said, I'm ready to see it on the floor. I'm ready to see it happen.
Oh, yeah. And I'm one of the few people that are, like, blindly following Sam Hinkie. I think that the man's got a plan, and, I mean, you might not like losing for 3 or 4 seasons, but they probably were going to lose anyway with LeBron in the East. But
on merit, yes.
I mean, I think the man needs to get it done, and I really like what he's done.
Yeah, and I like the style of players that he looks for, the players, because you see how the league has evolved. It's a point guard league. It's a perimeter league right now. So he obviously needs to find that player to fill that role. He likes the players who can step out on the perimeter and hit the three, get to the rim, create for others, not take those intermediate shots that are those basically, the mid-range shots because they aren't analytically on par of what the numbers say. So I do like the type of player that we think that he likes so far. So it's just a matter of both Russell and Moutier fit the bill when it comes to the analytical type of player. I liked Elfrid Payton. I thought they should have kept Elfrid Payton, but they wanted Dario Saric. They got it done, and they picked up a first-round pick. So I'm curious to see. I'm not going to say I'm fully on board with everything as of yet. I still would like to see a little more. I mean, he hasn't really done anything astronomical where you can say, oh, I love everything Sam Hinkie's doing. I think I see the vision of what he wants to do, but he has to nail this draft. And you have to, reap the benefits of getting those other three protected picks that you traded Michael Carter-Williams for the one with the Los Angeles Lakers. You need to see something out of that. You can't just trade, whether I like him or not. He is a starting point guard in the NBA, Michael Carter-Williams. You can't just give him up for a possible pick that we don't know when you're going to get, because it is top three protected next year. I don't think the Lakers are going to be awful where they end up in the top three, because Kobe Bryant will be back. If the Sixers don't get the pick outside of the top five this year, they're going to get another young player. You get Julius Randle returning, and Jordan Clarkson has shown to be a nice young player on their roster. So even though they're in a tough West, Kobe Bryant will be on that roster, and they will not be as bad as a top five pick. So Sam Hinkie has to hit on this draft. This is a crucial draft for Sam Hinkie.
I couldn't agree with you more about the draft. It is absolutely imperative that he has a great 2015 draft. But Devon, thanks for taking the time out tonight to join us. We really appreciate it. We love breaking down the NBA, and we hope to have you on again in the future. Thanks a lot.
Oh, guys, no problem. Thank you for having me, Justin and Mike, and talk to you guys soon.
Thank you. Thanks a lot, Devon. Everybody, that's Devon Givens of 97.5, producer down there. Also, Sixers reporter for them as well. And as you can hear, his NBA knowledge is second to none.
Yeah, and I have to agree with his views about Sam Hinkie. You know, you'd like to think, and especially as a Sixers fan, you'd like to think he's on the right track, but all he's done is win, 60 games in 3 years?
Something like that.
So, as far as a boat of confidence, I don't know. But then again, you see what with the last GM did. Yeah, everything you did with Iggy and all them and Evan Turner and all these guys, you know what I mean? Where did that get you? 1 year when you were kind of relevant for like 3 weeks? When you had the series versus the Bulls, who were blatantly injury-ridden without Noah and Rose. And then you get a team 2 years past their prime in the Celtics. So it's not like you were competing with good teams either. So you gotta make a change, and you gotta go big or go home.
Go big, go home.
And that's what I like to do.
Wait, so hold on.
These Philly teams are doing right now.
All right, real quick, before we get to a couple other things we gotta talk about, there's just something that we need to discuss right now. What happened to your phone? During that and I just have to know.
I don't know if everybody heard that, but when we asked him, I think one of the last questions. See, my phone does this thing sometimes where it'll just play music. Now, the other person usually can't hear the music who I'm talking to. So it'll just be amongst their words in my ear, it'll be lightly playing a song. And it's just a random song. I was not listening to that song earlier. I had not listened to that song for probably, I don't know, years.
What song was it?
I don't even know what song it was. That was him. I mean, my phone does do that. I'll answer it sometimes, and it'll just be playing, some music.
I was more confused that I did something, and I was like, oh, well.
We have to assume that we're doing something wrong, because it's usually
the way that it goes, yeah.
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 But
chalk one up for the good guys this time.
But coming back to
NFL.
We
have a couple of things.
Left.
We have a couple of things I need to address to you
for the NFL.
Yeah. Well, Brady appealed today, obviously.
He did get the appeal in.
He's got that in. He had until 11:59 tonight, but.
Oh, yeah.
It got done. Beckham Jr. is on the Madden cover ahead of one Gronkowski.
I bet Gronk's a little peeved by that. I wonder.
I bet he is, too. I bet
you know
he
what?
Is.
He's probably like this Deflategate stuff.
D's nuts. That's what he said.
Just got me losing this cover, which would have made me so many more advertisement deals.
Yeah.
I bet that's a lot of money probably to be on the Madden cover, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Some huge sponsorship with EA Sports.
Gronk will get it next year.
We don't know that.
I mean, I find it hard to believe that.
The only thing that annoys me is that you gave it to a rookie.
He's the youngest player to ever have it.
Yeah.
But I don't know. You know what? It was the perfect time because
Real quick, the new NFL. Madden trivia question. You know who the youngest player was before him? To be on the cover.
Michael Vick.
Nope.
I don't know. I can't think of it.
Vince Young. Vince Young.
I guess Michael Vick. It took him a few years.
Yeah, I believe he was in his third year, fourth year, I believe.
Was
well,
Vince Young was in his second, third,
right after his second year. Going into his
so
third.
So it was an extra year after Odell Beckham then.
But yeah, but still, Beckham had such a great year as a rookie. I mean, I never seen a guy who, I mean, he's
primed to come in and have 2,000 yards this year with this offense.
Yeah.
He had 13 running yards in 12 games.
Now he's got And now he's got Victor Cruz on the other side.
He's got Victor Cruz. That's only going to help him.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just dominant. He's like DeSean Jackson with, like, route running ability.
Oh, yeah.
Like a bigger version, too. A little stronger, makes better moves. I don't know about makes better moves, but, like, he's a more, I would say, a bigger athlete.
What do you think about this? Bruce Irvin, linebacker / DN for the Seattle Seahawks. Now, he was a first-round pick out of West Virginia in 2011, but he was one of those guys that had a lot of question marks coming out about his character when he got drafted. So he would have been like a top 10 pick, you know, in his draft class.
Yeah.
But he had some character issues and everything. He had some off-the-field problems, so he slid. He's still a first-round pick, though. And I'm a big fan of him. If, for those of you who don't know who he is the guy that tried to fight Gronk on the last play of the Super Bowl.
He's a nut, that dude.
Yeah.
You know, I'll tell you, and I've never heard anything like that before that a player would say, I'm going, how do they know if that team even wants him? Because,
I haven't said yet what he said.
Oh, he didn't say.
No.
I remember from earlier, he said he wanted to be
in Atlanta for 2016. Now, he's still under contract this year. But he wants it because they didn't pick up his fifth-year option, which would have paid him about $8 million. And he said something along the lines of, F an option, I'll get it myself. But he's from Atlanta. That's the only reason he said it. I didn't realize it was for 2016 at first. Listen to this. That first time I read the headline, I got so excited because I was about to use Atlanta in Madden. And I was like, well, I have to wait another year. I wasn't thinking straight. I was like, he joined them.
Right, right.
He's in Atlanta right now.
Yeah, that's what you think. But this is my thing now, Gatsby. Why would you think Atlanta wants you when you're talking this way about your organization? How do you know that a team's interested in you? Just because your D coordinator from the year before went there?
Well, another thing that is that his hometown team is from Atlanta. So he's probably just saying his favorite team.
And he's saying he came from, you know, he said one of the things that he came from the street, he went through harder stuff than this, meaning what he's going through in Seattle now. And I just don't.
Playing in two straight Super Bowls is real tough, isn't it?
I just hope that nobody pushed him to say anything like that. As far as, like, a meaning someone from Atlanta reaching out to him and saying after.
Tampering.
Because that's tampering. That's a big deal, especially this early.
Oh, who was it? The Jets? Didn't they just get hit with, like, a $100,000 fine for tampering? With Darrell Revis?
Yeah. I mean, $100,000. With the Patriots getting $1 million, like, that's, like, a little slap on the wrist.
Oh, yeah. But actually, it's two separate fines of $500,000 apiece. That's why it's $1 million. They got fined for two separate. We're wrapping the show up now. We've got about a minute left. Thanks, everybody, that tuned in. Thanks to Dave LaRue, Sporting News, and the Bay Area radio guy joining us at 8:15. And a big special thanks to Devon Givens of 97.5 The Fanatic back right here in Philadelphia. Producer down there and the Sixers beat reporter for jumping on and breaking down the X's and O's for us. And somebody finally had something to tell me about Dario Saric.
And thank you. It was really good, too, because I really am excited to see him coming moving forward, especially the Sixers. moving forward in the next couple of years. But once again, thanks for coming on and joining Wizard Radio. You can always chat us on Facebook and Twitter. Check out our website.
Wizardradio.com. Thanks for everybody for listening. This is another great episode. Thanks for Ben. We're here at Red Sound Studios out in Warrington. For Michael Irana, I'm your host, Justin Emery. Check us out on Monday.